Sahanabhavatu, sahanabhunaktu, sahaviryankaravavahai, tejasvinavahitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so what's been given out now is from the actual text, but it just specifically deals in the areas what concerns women. It also, some of them are naturally overlaps, but they're specifically within the field. So then, that's here. So many other things then are there that are common to both, that are just part of household duties or other things of just proper character and behavior. So those will be in the bigger study. So that's not in this text. Does that make some sense? You know. So now here, then this is from topic 2, the rule of the sacraments. So that you would see in the outline is page 40. So the purpose of the sacraments and conception and other sacraments sanctify the body in this life and after death. Okay. Let's see. Okay. With holy rites prescribed by the Veda, must the ceremony on conception and other sacraments be performed for twice born men, which sanctify the body and purify from sin in this life and after death. By oblations during the mother's pregnancy, by the Jatakarma, the ceremony after birth, the Chaudakarma, tonsor, and the Mangibanda, the tying of the sacred girdle of manja grass, is the taint derived from both parents removed from twice-born men. By the study of the Veda, by vows, by burnt oblations, by the recitation of sacred texts, by the acquisition of threefold sacred science, by offering to the gods, rishis, and mains, by the procreation of sons, by the great sacrifices, and by Shrauta rites, this human body is made fit for union with Brahman. So, means of the different sacraments that are there, we see some are specifically what we know of as these sacraments of samskaras. But then, there are so many. Samskar technically means that which creates impression. So anything that's created an impression on you, good or bad, that's a samskar. So then, in the Vedas, then the idea is that there's certain common samskars which everybody must have. That way then you're going to have a common culture. Right? It's just natural. Like if you're discussing with somebody, and what you're discussing in the other person, there's no common language, no common examples, nothing common, then you can't actually discuss. So that element then is important, that there's some common body of samskara. So here then we see that these early ones, up to the shaving, up to upanayanam, then whatever is the impurities that the child may have received from the parents, means the parents' own impurities, because they will come in the consciousness. So then those are removed by this. Otherwise then the taints of the parents remain with the child. So then whatever is the problems with the parents, that will remain with the children. So that's removed there. Then the next group, then we see that is how they purify themselves and actually make themselves spiritually fit. Does that make sense? Yes. Tantra means shaving of the head. Chudakarna is when the child, I think in the third or fifth year, when they shave the head. Because the hair that they were born with, that's impure. So then they're purified from that. But not until the third or fifth year. Because in the first few years, then the head is not, it hasn't formed yet properly. And when you shave, it dries the skin a little bit, so it'll create some tension. So you don't want to create that tension until the skull is completely, you know, solidified itself like that. So that's why it's in that kind. So then there'll be a little bit more definition here. Then the early rites, Jatakarma, birthrites. Before the navel string is cut, the Jatakarma, birthright, must be performed for a male child. While sacred formulas are being recited, he must be fed with gold, honey, and butter. Gold means is on a spoon, there's honey, butter, and I think barley. So by doing that, then it develops intelligence. Jatakarma is also known as Medha Yajna. Is that that thing there, that chemical reaction, will create intelligence in the child. Therefore, it's the first thing to be done. Because in the Vedic culture, then, the intelligence is considered the most important. Because if you're intelligent, then you can understand. If you're not intelligent, then it's harder to understand. It says later on, we'll say they're all done for everybody. My God. I think what it means is because it says for a male child, while sacred formulas are being recited. For the girls, they don't say the mantras, but it means, in other words, the ritual is done, but they don't recite the mantras like that. But the girls will also be, whoever is born is fed with the gold, honey, and butter. Like that. That's the Namadeya, name giving. But let the father perform, or cause to be performed, the Namadeya, the rite of naming the child, on the 10th or 12th day after birth, or on an auspicious lunar day in an auspicious muhurta under an auspicious constellation. Let a brahmana's name denote something auspicious. The names of women should be easy to pronounce, possess a simple meaning, be pleasing, auspicious, and end in long vowels. Long vowel, like you have Radha. You know, you generally see the women's names already always have long vowels. Like that, generally, like that. You see, like Draupadi is Krishna. Krishna is Krishna. It's a short vowel, but generally you'll see in most of the ladies' names they end either in a long vowel or they end with an I. Like that. So it's that always denotes that it's feminine, like that. Nishkramana and Anaprasana. The first Nishkramana means the first when they first leave the house. Then the fourth month, the Nishkramana, the first leaving of the house of the child, should be performed. In the sixth month, the Anaprasana, first feeding with rice, and optionally any other auspicious ceremony required by the custom of the family. I think means these are, in other words, this is not giving all details. This is giving enough detail that it's understood exactly what you're talking about. Because then other shastras deal with the details of this. So the samskaras are specifically dealt with in the Griha Sutras, like that, that are subsections of the Brahmanas, which are the part of the Veda that deals with ritual. So in there, then you get all the Griha Sutras then describe exactly how it's done. So there the details would be given, but the basic principle you'll always find here. So anything to do with what is the religious mood, the religious, what would be the considerations, what are the principles involved, that will be given in the Dharma Shastra. The details of some of these things will be given in other Shastras. So if you look in the Sakriya Sardipika, then there, Gopal Bhakti Goswami is given more detail like that. I think also on the girls that it's done, I think in the fifth or seventh month. So I think their teeth, you know, it happens either a little earlier or a little later. So the boys at 6 months, the girls would be fifth or seventh. And optionally any other auspicious ceremony required by the custom of the family. Because there are 10 main samskars, but there's 48 in total of all little samskars. So some family lines follow some families follow others. Prabhupada mentioned about the 10 main ones. Like that. So basically what will be mentioned here is coming from that. Chudakarma, Tansur. According to the teachings of the revealed text, the Chudakarma, Tansur, must be performed for the sake of spiritual merit by all twice-born men in the first or third year. Okay, here's first or third. Okay. So first, third, and I think it's also mentioned fifth if it's not done in the first two. But before the first year, it shouldn't be performed until the first year is complete.
Sacraments for women. This series of ceremonies is also performed for females without mantra. This whole series of ceremonies must be performed for females also in order to sanctify the body at the proper time and in the proper order, but without the recitation of sacred texts. Vritti. From the birth ceremony up to Upanayanam, the samskars are all performed for the girls. The benefits of Upanayanam are gained not through the Upanayanam rite, but through marriage, as explained in the next verse. The nuptial ceremony is stated to be the Vedic sacrament for women, and to be equal to the initiation, that's Upanayanam. Serving the husband, equivalent to the residence in the house of the teacher, and household duties the same as the daily worship of the sacred fire.
So the same benefit is gained, but it just has a different method. So that's the thing in the Vedas, then everybody gets the, the spiritual benefit is equal, but how it will be gained is maybe different, because it has to, it has to match the nature like that. So it will be specifically designed accordingly.
The Grihastha Ashram. Topic 5. So this would go with what is on ordinances, studentship. Yeah, so this would be in 59 in the outline. The rule of bathing, graduation, sambartana. Only after studying the Veda may a student enter the order of householders. The vow of studying the three Vedas under a teacher must be kept for 36 years or half that time or for a quarter or until the student has perfectly learned them. A student who has studied in due order the three Vedas, or two, or even one only, without breaking the rules of studentship, shall enter the order of householders. So, Vritti, this is from Srila Prabhupada, made the point, a first-class brahmachari makes a first-class grihastha. He was famous for the strict performance of his duties and has received his heritage, the Veda, from his father, and is so inclined, shall be honored, sitting on a couch and adorned with a garland, with the present of a cow and the honey mixture. So this is Madhuparka. Right, so means if he's so inclined, he may decide not to be. He may not decide not to get married, so then he can remain a nice sthika brahmachari. But if he's inclined, he has the facility, he's finished his studies, then he would get married. So that's the general tradition, is until the studies are finished, then one wouldn't get married. Because otherwise it's very hard to focus on both. Because grihastha life takes, a full determination to focus on. So then if they're distracted by study, then it won't work. It's like you have a test tomorrow, and if you don't study, then you won't pass your test. At the same time, your wife's head is just broken into 10,000 pieces. You don't attend to it, your marriage may fall apart. So it means in the Vedic concept, you shouldn't have to make such decisions. It should be you finish your study, and now you're studying to deepen your understanding, further your understanding, further your application of your understandings like this. But it shouldn't be that you're gaining your fundamental knowledge before marriage. I mean, after marriage. It should be that's all done before. Because once marriage starts, then how much time can be put into that is not guaranteed. So the idea is that the student should have studied nicely. He's kept his vows nicely. He's fixed nicely. Then he'll be a good... he'll be able to be a good husband. Otherwise, he won't so much. If he can't control himself in the Gurukul, he won't be able to control himself in his household life. If he can't focus as a brahmachari, he won't be able to focus as a grihastha. It's not that suddenly there's some magic that changes. I mean, hormones create some magic, but other than that, then there's no real magic happening there. As the guy was before marriage, the same guy is there after marriage. Therefore, they should be properly trained. Topic 6, the law of marriage. Okay, so the appropriate arrangements is one should marry someone of equal nature. That's the essential point. Having bathed means graduation, because the graduation ceremony is performed by sprinkling the graduate with water. So therefore they're known as one who's bathed. That's the meaning of the snataka, one who is bathed. Having bathed with the permission of his teacher and performed the and performed according to the rule, the Samvartana, the rite on returning home. A twice-born man shall marry a wife of equal nature who is endowed with auspiciousness. Okay, so then here's quoting from a verse later. Twice-born men who in their folly wed Sudras soon degrade their families and their children to the state of Shudras. Riti, Shudras are identified by qualities, not by birth, like that. In other words, the point is that it should be equal nature. There's no problem with Shudras, but a Shudra should marry a Shudra, because then they have equal nature. So the whole point is that someone with a Brahminical mentality should marry someone like that. Vaishya, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Shudra, Shudra. Then it works nicely. Then the children will be, you know, balanced. Otherwise, then the children themselves will be mixed, and then they can't figure out who they are. So the parents may know who they are, but the children can't figure it out. So then it makes it very difficult. Okay. Then, a damsel who is neither a Sapinda on the mother's side nor belongs to the same family Gotra on the father's side is recommended to twice-born men for wedlock and conjugal union. Sapinda means having a common ancestor within 7 generations, and Gotra means family line traceable back to any one of the 21 Prajapatis that we mentioned before. So that means on the girl should be different from whatever the boy's family line is in Gotra. And then Sapinda means on the mother's side they shouldn't have a common ancestor less than 7 generations. If it's the 7th generation, it doesn't matter. If you go back 7 generations and they have a common ancestor, that's okay. But if it's 6, then it's not recommended. Okay, inappropriate relations. In connecting himself with a wife, let him carefully avoid the following families, be they ever so great or rich and kind: horses, sheep, grain, or other property. One who neglects the sacred rites, and one in which the Veda is not studied. Also, let him not marry a maiden who talks excessively and disagreeably or has red eyes. Red eyes meaning from always being angry, like that. But a prudent man should not marry a maiden whose father is not known through fear lest he should commit sin. Because if he doesn't know who the father is, no one knows, she may be his relative. Like that. So one has to be careful of that. You know, you have that, you know, famous Western thing, what is it, Oedipus or something like that. You know, he didn't know, and so then he had a bit of a problem there. So that should be there. So, you know, generally in the, you know, devotee community, everybody knows who everyone is, so it's not a big problem. But it may be if the girl doesn't have a father or a brother, you don't know who she is. So then that should be checked. Topic 7. Now listen to the brief description of the following 8 marriage rites used by the 4 varnas, which partly secure benefits and partly produce evil, both in this life and after death. They are the rite of Brahma, the rite of the gods, that of the rishis, that of Prajapati, that of the asuras, that of the Gandharvas, that of the Rakshasas, and that of the Paisachas. Paisachas mean ghosts. The rites lawful for each varna. Which is lawful for each varna, and which are the virtues or faults of each rite, all this I will declare to you, as well as their good and evil results with respect to the offspring. So who's speaking here? This is Bhrigu Muni. He's describing this to the sage. That's why you see it's a narrative. He's describing it. One may know that the first 6, according to the order above followed above, are lawful for a Brahmana. The last 4 for a Kshatriya, and the same 4, excepting the Rakshasa rite, for Vaishya and Shudra. Like, lawful means they're not considered illegal, but they're not necessarily recommended. So he sees that. That means the Brahma rite, the Daiva rite, the Arsha rite, and the Prajapatya, Asura and Gandharva. But he'll give some definitions of that as he goes. In the previous verse, 6 rites are considered lawful, but of those 6, 4 are approved. Right? Means if he follows those 6, it will not be sin. But actually what's approved, what's considered pious, are the first 4. Is that right? Because the Asura and the Rakshasa generally they're not recommended like that. The gift of daughters amongst Brahmanas is most approved by a libation of water. But in the case of other castes, it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. Here, by a libation of water means, it indicates the Brahma rite where there's no conditions being imposed. Because amongst Brahmins, there's no condition. Because you're giving to a Brahmin. You can't impose a condition in giving anything to a Brahmin. You give in charity and that's it. So then giving the daughter, there's no conditions. You can't say, well, you have to live here, you have to this, you have to that. You can't do that. That's another rite. If you want to do that, then it's another rite. But you'll see the benefits of it. Then it becomes down to another level. But this one then means it's given to a qualified boy, and that child can save 21 generations. And the other rites will go down to 15 and 13 and I think 7. So automatically it drops. But for the Kshatriyas or for the Vaishyas, they can impose some restrictions. Like you see at the Swayambhar, the father may say, okay, only if you can string this bow or pick this bow up or, catch these, I think it was 7 bulls for Krishna, 7 or 9 bulls, you had to tie them up. You know, he can set these kind of things just because there's a certain standard that he wants for, of strength or prowess for his daughter. So he can set that just ensure that standard's met. Kshatriyas. Yeah, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they can do stuff where they set some particular, make some conditions. It means pouring water. It means that when you're doing, like you see the rite, how we're performing it, is it's this brahminical rite. It means the water is there, and the father, when he pours that water, that girl is given. There's no strings attached anymore.
When the girl goes to the father's tent, the father
knows. No, when in the marriage rite, when the hands are tied, then the father takes water and pours the water. That's like signing the contract that this girl is given. So for the Brahmins, it's just that only, that libation of water. You've checked everything, you're happy, the water is poured, that's all. Others, it's not, they don't, it's, if they make some conditions, that's their business. Like Prajapatiya, generally there's some instruction and all that, but that's considered the lowest of the four, where conditions are set that, you know, you can only do this or only do that or so many things like that. So those kind of things are at the time of marriage. Like that. But what Gopal Bhatta has given us is the Brahma rite. So whatever devotees are doing, that's the Brahma rite anyway. So it's not...
Also, it can also mean here that there's other aspects that can mean also is that if at a betrothal, then it's done by just pouring of water. That the Brahmin has said, I will give my daughter, and he pours water. So then that's enough. But in others, then there must be the consideration of the boy and the girl must agree to it. Right? Means in this condition, for amongst Brahmins, they will see it another qualified Brahmin. The father will do his best to ensure that the boy is of a standard that he wants. Then once he is happy with it, the girl is happy with it. But in the other forms, then, it's generally the girl should be happy with it also. Like that. The boy and the girl should know who each other is. Like that. So that's why generally you see what's practiced by most is the Brahma rite.
But in these institutes of the sacred law, 3 of the 5 last named are declared to be lawful and 2 unlawful. The Paisach and the Asura rites must never be used. The Prajapati Gandharva and the Rakshasa are considered lawful. Like that. But they're not necessarily considered the best, but they're lawful. So that's why you have to see here. So when they say something is lawful, it means it's not sinful. And if it's approved, that means it's recommended. So you see throughout the Dharma Shastra will do that. It'll say if you do like this, it's not sinful. That doesn't mean it's approved. It just means if you do like that, you won't get any reaction for it. You won't get any sin for it.
And then by reading the text, then you'll see that after so many definitions of things that are lawful, then they'll say what they recommend. Right? Like he'll go down this whole list, and at the end he'll recommend the Brahma rite. Like that. For Kshatriyas, those before mentioned two rites, the Gandharva and the Rakshasa, whether separate or mixed, are permitted by the sacred tradition. But Prabhupada mentions that these two are also in the Kali Yuga are forbidden. Like that. So that leaves technically only the first four rites are approved. Out of the eight rites, then of the last four that are not so considered so good, the Rakshasa and the Gandharva are lawful. The Asura and the Paisach, Asura meaning where you pay for the girl, or Paisach where you just catch the girl and she's not really aware what's going on, those are forbidden by Manu. Then, Prabhupada mentions in Kali Yuga, then the Rakshasa and the Gandharva are also forbidden. They're not recommended at all. So that sticks to the first four, which means with the approval of the father, the girl is married. Like that. Though there's four forms of that. You know, it means either the father chooses by his own endeavor, the father chooses by just happening to bump into somebody nice at his yajna, or the boy's side approaches the girl's family, or the girl through her offices approaches the boy's family. Like that. So you have four forms of that. So 7-2, the eight marriage rites. The gift of a daughter, after adorning her with costly garments and honoring her by presents of jewels, to a man learned in the Veda and of good conduct, whom the father himself invites, is called the Brahma rite. The gift of a daughter who has been bedecked with ornaments to a priest who duly officiates at a sacrifice, during the course of its performance, they call the Daiva rite. When the father gives away his daughter according to the rule after receiving from the bridegroom for the fulfillment of the sacred law, a cow and a bull or two pairs, that is called the Arsha rite. The gift of a daughter by her father after he has addressed the couple with the text, may both of you perform together your duties, and then he describes those duties and all that, then, and has shown honor to the bridegroom, is called in the Smriti the Prajapatya rite, the Asura. When the bridegroom receives a maiden, after having given as much wealth as he can afford to the kinsman and to the bride herself, according to his own will, that is called the Asura rite. The voluntary union of a maiden and her lover, one must know to be the Gandharva rite, which springs from desire and has sexual intercourse for its purpose. The forcible abduction of a maiden from her home, while she cries out and weeps after breaking into their houses and her kinsmen have been beaten or wounded, is called the Rakshasa rite. Definitely more exciting. When a man by stealth seduces a girl who is sleeping, intoxicated, or disordered in intellect, that is the eighth, the most base and sinful rite of the Paisachas. The gift of daughters amongst Brahmanas is most approved by a libation of water, but in the cases of other castes it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. So, by a libation of water indicates the Brahma rite without any conditions being imposed. While the Brahma rite is recommended for all Varnas, others may adopt other forms of approved marriage rites which all require mutual consent. Qualities of the rites. Huh? I don't know. I've only heard of that it has something to do with length of life. I don't know. You'd have to ask someone who knows the Palma school. Because there's a consideration of that is by the nakshatras. There's 27 nakshatras, so they fall into three groups. Nine of them are considered Daiva, nine of them human, and nine of them Asura. So then it's one of the things that one considers in the marriage compatibility, astrological compatibility, is if they're of the same Gana. Like that, so Daiva marries Daiva, Manusha marries Manusha, and Asura marries Asura.
But let's say you can put some hands,
Maybe, I don't know it. You'd have to ask the palmist what they're looking for there, like that, because the little finger is Mercury. So exactly what it does, then it may have something to do with, I have no idea. But there may be. There's palmistry you can do so many things. It means people can look at you and by your form tell, you know, what's your main planet and all those things. So I'm sure that you can do these things, but I don't know. Listen now to me, ye brahmanas, while I fully declare what quality has been ascribed by Manu to each of these marriage rites. The son of a wife, wedded according to the Brahma rite, if he performs meritorious acts, liberates from sin 10 ancestors, 10 descendants, and himself is the 21st. So when they say 21 generations, that means including themselves. So that's 10 before, 10 after, and themselves. The son of a wife wedded according to... That's also if he's following the principles and stuff. You know, he's somebody of standing, you know, it mentions there. Yeah, if he performs meritorious acts, means he's not, you know, a debauchee or something. The son of a wife wedded according to the Daiva rite likewise saves 7 ancestors and 7 descendants. So that would, and himself, that would make 15. The son of a wife married by the Arsha rite, 3 in the ascending and descending lines, and himself, that's 7. And the son of a wife married by the rite of Ka, Prajapati, 6 in either line. So then that will make 13. From the 4 marriages enumerated successively, which begin with the Brahma rite, spring sons, radiant with knowledge of the Veda, and honored by the Shishtas, good men. Endowed with qualities of beauty and goodness, possessing wealth and fame, and obtaining as many enjoyments as they desire, and being most righteous, they will live 100 years. But from the remaining 4 blamable marriages spring sons who are harsh and speakers of untruth, who lack faith in the Veda and the sacred law. In the blameless marriages, blameless children are born to men. In blamable marriages, blamable offspring. One should therefore avoid the blamable forms of marriage. So he's described everything because that's what exists. So he's pointing out there's only 8 ways in which a man and woman can get married. So here's the 8. Of that, these ones are lawful. And of that, this is what's recommended. Like that. And of what's recommended, this is the best. So we see is that he goes through this. So it's giving everything so that you're very, very clear on what can be done or what cannot be done. So you'll generally see is that in the Kshatriyas that they may have Gandharva marriage or Rakshasa marriage, but then after that then they'll perform one of the other rites, depending upon, you know, who is, they'll perform a rite that is sanctioned by the father. So they use a combination. Right? Like Arjuna kidnapped Subhadra. So then, after kidnapping her, that's a Rakshasa rite. Then they go and collect him and Subhadra, bring him back to Dwarka, and then they have a big festival and a big marriage. You know? Or the girl will choose the boy, like that. So then that puts it in at a Swayamvar, so that'll throw it into the Prajapatya. Then after that, then they'll perform the marriage according to the Brahma rites. So they'll know many times there'll be always these combinations like that. But the Rakshasas, they just go steal the girl, that's it. You know, like that. That they don't go beyond that. So the original people, the Gandharvas, they just decide that they're going to be married and they are. That's it. You know, so it just moves like that. But in humans, then generally they use a mix if they're using these lower ones. They never leave it only at that. There's some technical point that I've only heard of from in South. The Brahmins there know something about it. There's a particular cousin, first cousins only, that can get married. And generally in certain families, when they're born, it's just automatically accepted they'll get married. And only if they decide not to will they not. Because in there you get the actual combination, because the boy takes on the quality of the mother and the daughter of the father. So what happens is there's a common grandfather and grandmother, and so what happens is those natures cross and come back together again, so you get the exact same nature as the grandparents. So it's only on one side it does that. It's only like that. Yeah, I think it's only on the mother's side. It comes from that side. It doesn't work on the other side. So from what I can understand, that's the reason it's there. But it's just one particular one. All other ones are not allowed. But it's not practiced by everybody. Okay.
Grihastha Brahmachari. Let the husband approach his wife in due season, being constantly satisfied with her alone. He, being intent on pleasing her, may approach her with a desire for conjugal union on any day except the parvanas. So Vriti then approach his wife in due season. Season means the time of fertility. You'll see that will be constantly used. They'll always use the term season. Like that. Being constantly satisfied with her alone by not approaching others. He, being intent on pleasing her in consultation with the wife, means he wants to please her, means they will have discussed that they decide to have a child. Not that he just decides one fine day, hey, you know, like that. And then the parvanas, that's the new moon, the full moon, and the two astamis, the eighth day of the waxing and waning moon. So those must always be avoided. So that's from the titis, like that. Now it'll mention from the days of the season. 16 days and night in each month, including 4 days which differ from the rest and are censured by the virtuous, are called the natural season of women. Riti. 4 days which differ from the rest. The 3 days of the menstrual cycle and the day after which she takes bath is the fourth. So those 4 days are dropped automatically out of the 16. And then, in another place, then it gives the same thing. The evidence why that's then. Let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her courses appear, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. For the wisdom, the energy, the strength, the sight, and the vitality of a man who approaches a woman covered with menstrual secretions utterly perish. If he avoids her while she is in that condition, his wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality will increase. And it also then in the 11th, where it's mentioning the, prayaschityas means the punishments, then it mentions there also, man who has had conjugal union with a menstruating woman, they'll have to perform a penance. So that's considered improper. Like that. Yeah. Okay, so, but among these, now, the 16 days that are there, then the first four, then that's already been mentioned, those are dropped. Then the 11th and the 13th are also forbidden. But any of the other nights, then, from that, then one can choose. So that means you've taken out certain days of the titis, and you've taken out certain days of the cycle itself. Then putting that together, then you can choose days. Then technically, for someone who is the twice born will follow this. Yeah. But specifically Brahmins, then there's an additional day is put in here, which is the 14th. So what do you have here? 13th. Also the 14th day is dropped. You know, the 11th and 13th, the first four, the 11th and 13th remain, but then Brahmins generally drop the 14th day also. Okay, and then that's mentioned in relationship to others and training. The new moon day destroys the teacher. In this case, it would be the husband. The 14th day, the pupil. So that would mean the wife. The 8th and the full moon days destroy the remembrance of the Veda. So in conclusion, you put that together. Unsuitable days, counting from the beginning of the cycle, is the first four, the 11th, and the 13th. And the unsuitable titis is new moon, the full moon, and the astamis. And then other days that, like, I think Pancharatra and stuff like that, they say is that Ekadasi and festival days should be avoided. Right? Because some people don't bother with those things because they're smartas or this or that. So for them, Janmashtami doesn't mean anything. But for devotees, then those that are festival days for the deities, those then are naturally dropped because then you'll be focusing on the deity, not focusing on today is when you'll conceive a child. Like that. So then, within that, what you get on the even nights, that means starting from day one, are conceived, sons are conceived, and daughters on the uneven ones. Hence, a man who desires to have sons should approach his wife in due season on the even nights. A male child is produced by a greater quality of male seed, a female child by the prevalence of the female. If both are equal, a hermaphrodite or a boy and a girl, you get twins. A boy and a girl, twins. Or you can get a hermaphrodite. So, generally you never hear of that in the West. But, you know, you don't hear of it, but it seems to happen. If both are weak or deficient in quantity, a failure of conception. He who avoids women on the 6 forbidden nights and on 8 others is equal in chastity to a student in whichever order he may live. So Prabhupada mentions on this that if the householder follows these rules, he's considered a brahmacharya. So that's how he calls grihastha brahmacharya. If someone is conceiving a child only for only approaching his wife to conceive a child, and he's following the rules of that, then he's considered a brahmacharya. Like that. So the same. So the nice, he gets the same benefits. It's not considered breaking of his vow. Like that. But if he doesn't follow these, then he's not considered brahmacharya. Any questions on this? Okay, honor of women. No father who knows the law must take even the slightest gratuity for his daughter. Now this is going back to the Arsha rite. Now he's going to explain why the Arsha rite is considered bad. Not Arsha, excuse me, Asura rite is considered bad. And he will define how Arsha rite is not like the Asura, because some will doubt the Arsha rite also. No father who knows the law must take even the smallest gratuity for his daughter. For a man who, through avarice, takes a gratuity is a seller of his offspring. Like that means if he takes some benefits from the boy's side of the family, then it's equal to selling his daughter. So therefore, it's not done. That's why the girl is given in charity. That's why it's always used that term. Because otherwise, then nowadays, then many people, it's a matter of what are you willing to pay. So then it's like selling of the daughter. So that's always avoided. But those male relations who in their folly live on the separate property of women, in other words, appropriate the beasts of burden, carriages, and clothes of women, commit sin and will sink into hell. So then in the ninth chapter, then it describes what are the sixfold property of women. What was given before the nuptial fire? What was given on the bridal procession, what was given in token of love, what was received from her brother, mother, or father, that is called the sixfold property of a woman. So then, because the Arsha rite, you're technically giving, the boy said family is giving two bulls out of respect for the girl. So the family receives them because it's a proper rite, so it's the parents are arranging it. So they'll receive the bulls out of respect, but they're actually given to the girl. So that's why it's saying if they live off of that, because that's why it's mentioned here, is that's her property, because it's been given by the boy, right? What was given in token of love, so that means it's hers. So then, if they live off of that, then they will go to hell. Like that. That's the point being made here. Some call the cow and the bull given at the Arsha wedding a gratuity. But that is wrong, since the acceptance of a fee, be it small or great, is the sale of a daughter. Like that, what they're saying is, if it's a fee, then it is a surah, then it's banned. But if it's simply they're accepting on her behalf, then it's not. But when the relatives do not appropriate for their use the gratuity given, it is not a sale. In that case, the gift is only a token of respect and kindness towards the maidens. Yeah, then we discussed before about the girl's side of the family doesn't receive anything from the boy's side. They just don't give from that side. Otherwise, it looks like the girl is being bought, you know, like that. So generally, whenever they go and they're hosted by them, they'll leave some money or they'll leave something. They'll always leave. It means they won't accept anything from that side. It means when the girl's side goes to the boy's house. Like that, the other way around. It means that they won't accept anything from there. Otherwise, it looks like
there's a sale of the daughter. So that's the tradition that we see.
Women must be honored and adored by their fathers, brothers, and husbands, and brothers-in-law who desire their own welfare. Where women are honored, there the gods are pleased. But where they are not honored, no sacred right yields rewards. Where the female relations live in grief, the family soon wholly perishes. But that family where they are not unhappy ever prospers. The houses on which female relations, not being duly honored, pronounce a curse, perish completely as if destroyed by magic. Right? Just like Draupadi pronounced a curse on the Kauravas. And the whole dynasty just disappeared. There was nothing of it left. Absolutely nothing. Like that. And also on Ravana's side, everything finished. Right? The only one left was Bibhishana. And that's because he had left the whole scene. Hence, men who seek their own welfare should always honor women on holidays and festivals with gifts of ornaments, clothes, and nice food. Huh? Yeah. I mean, it'll work nicely, but it's you've got to balance it with the quotes that are coming up. Yeah. But no, this is it's the fact. That's the thing. Is what's not understood is that just because someone may be subordinate doesn't mean that they're not respected or honored. That's the principle. Because you have this very kind of like simplistic, gross understanding in the West. You know, everything there is pretty gross. So then the difficulty comes is they can't balance these two. Is that the wife may be submissive, but at the same time it doesn't mean she's not respected or honored. So that's means, because otherwise if you don't respect, how you'll be respected. If you don't act properly, how they'll act properly. So it works together. That's the difficulty of the whole thing, is that it's subtle. Because it's natural, since the rasa itself is the most subtle of all of them. It has the most, complex aspects. Then also its application will similarly be complex. So that's the principle. Yeah, because you see in the West even before, then, you know, the men would respect all the ladies and this and that, those the priests, it would be another thing, then everybody respects them like that. So that's a slightly different, but when it comes to those who are in the world of grihastha life, then the women are already always respected. You always take care of their needs, you always do all these different things, and if there's any hardship, then the men will go through it like that. So that aspect is there, but what happens is that you get the aspect of then when everybody's priests, then they start kind of losing the subtleties of there. But if they're priests and they're brahmacharis or sannyasis, then maybe then the it won't be so, they will respect the women, but they don't interact. So when it comes to facilities, they may get the facilities first. They may be fed first, or they may be, you know, get the vehicles first, or go through the doors first. But if you're dealing with priests who are grihasthas, that respect is given to the women. But at the same time, is then because you have the differences, then the men will eat in one situation, the women will eat in another situation. So there's all kinds of things that constantly are changing. Depending on, you change one aspect of the situation, the whole thing changes. Difficulty comes in the West, they like to have one thing that fits everything, but it doesn't exist. You know? That doesn't exist. Because it's too complex. Women aren't the same from moment to moment, so why would the dealings with them be the same? So that's the difficulty. It's when it's tried to be simplified too much, it doesn't work. So you have to understand what's going on. And then when these are in place, then there's a hope of you know, making it work. Means your priest would be like you have the father down at the church. That's what I'm saying there. Because
you see it in the Christian tradition, is all the men respect all the women. You know, they'd raise their hat or this and that, and they do all kinds of things like this. The women go through the door first. But if there was a priest, you know, a father, who was the one who did that, then they'd all open the door and he'd go through first. You know, like that. It means the women and the men both would step aside for him, because he was seen in the senior position. So that works very clear there. It's pretty simple, because basically everybody is grihastha, and only a few people are priests, like that. But then, so in many traditions they don't have men priests who are married. But like you have, like, let's say in some of the Christian groups, and like in the Judaic, like that, then their priests are married. So then they would go through the door first with their wife.
No, I was just thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but in Krishna consciousness, then the difficulty comes is because anyone who's second initiated comes into that category. So then it goes that those who are grihasthas are moving in that circle, then they have to respect the women. But those who are outside it, the sannyasis or the brahmacharis, who are in that position as, not, they're not just bhaktas or just the general brahmachari, but they're like the leaders of the community, then they would be, you know, given the facility first. Then after them, then you would see that the considerations could be arrangements for the women or things like that. So that's the difficulty, is that when you had in the beginning where everybody is like that, then it was hard to make those distinctions. And so then somehow or another, you know, it never got put into place. Okay. In that family where the husband is pleased with his wife and the wife with her husband, happiness will assuredly be lasting. For if the wife is not radiant with beauty, she will not attract her husband. And if she has no attractions for him, no children will be born. If the wife is radiant with beauty, the whole house is bright. But if she is destitute of beauty, all will appear dismal. Like that. And she'll make sure of that. Right? Degradation of the family. By low marriages meaning by mixed marriages, by omitting the performance of sacred rites, by neglecting the study of the Veda, and by irreverence towards brahmanas, great families sink low. By sacrificing for men unworthy to offer sacrifices, and by denying the future rewards of good works, families deficient in the knowledge of the Veda quickly perish. In other words, if one denies the importance of the scriptures, or say, oh, this doesn't apply, or, you know, these kind of things, where Prabhupada's given direction and instruction, but devotees ignore it by some modern standards, then one can become degraded. Or sacrificing for those who are not worthy to be sacrificed for, but you just do it for money, you know, like that. The families that are rich in the knowledge of the Veda, though possessing little wealth, are numbered among the great and acquire great fame. Topic 10, the duties of a snataka. So that's a huge thing, but we just pulled out some of them that are more directly applicable. Because in the duties of a snataka, because of being a householder, then so many of the duties are common. So things on serving prasad and taking care of guests and all those things haven't been included here. We've basically only taken those that specifically deal with the women. Okay.
Which means?
Snatak means one who is graduated. It means the person who is graduated, and by graduation then they get sprinkled with water in the ceremony. So that's considered that they are bathed. So snatak means one who is bathed.
Okay.
No, that's a different thing. I mean, that's different. That's not what the boys consider, but it may have that effect for the girl. Because in the marriage rite, then all the things that the boy got through the upanayanam and the everything that is in that section, she gets with the marriage rite itself. And then, by performing her duties and everything, then she gets all the benefits that he got from performing service or living with the guru or all those different things.
Can we go back to the
Mm-hmm.
Then why do Prabhupada say that it's
Radiant with beauty is, yeah, radiant means is that her subtle body is beautiful. You take the nicest, you know, top maha, you know, mega model, and she's bent out of shape. She's the ugliest thing around. Like that. And you can take a real simple, common girl, and if she is very happy, she looks very attractive. So that's why the word radiant is used, is that it means her mood. Because before all, because the Dharma Shastra is actually how to deal with the subtle body. Because that's the platform on which emotion is tasted. The gross body is not where it's tasted. You can get things that are interpreted as emotion. The boy touches the girl, she gets a few tingles. That's interpreted as emotion, but it's actually not. That's the lower. That's dealing down in just the senses. Emotion is actually the that connection between the two subtle bodies, like that. So that's what Dharma Shastra deals with, how to ensure that that's going on. It doesn't, the other things comes automatically, but it's, that's its focus is on that aspect. And also it just means what you define as beauty, right? Because a girl, if she's properly trained, though she's maybe physically very beautiful, will naturally be very, she'll pull all their energies in. So you can't really see that unless she's with the husband alone. So then you can see is that the character is there. So you could say she's not that beautiful. So that girl who's out there and she's beautiful to everybody, everyone's attracted, don't marry that girl. Because she's too common. You know, even though she may be physically very beautiful. You know, so it's that you have both of those aspects. One, if she is very extremely beautiful, it'd be a problem because then she may be proud of that. It may deviate her. That'll come up later when we see in the section on adultery. And others may be attracted, so it's always a problem. So he has to work extra hard to see that his wife is taken care of, is protected. So you get both. But, you know, the basic principle is all women are attractive, so it's just a matter of if their mood is right, then they'll all be attractive. So being, like in the, you know, you see in Indian culture, just all girls are nice, because they all have the same kind of mood of femininity. So femininity is attractive. Sensuality, that should be avoided. Okay. So, anything else in that? Topic 10, the duties of a snataka. A brahmana who is a snataka must discharge the following duties. Brahmana who is a snataka and subsists by one of the above mentioned modes of life must discharge the following duties which secure heavenly bliss, long life, and fame. Let him, though mad, we read this, let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her courses appear, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. Because if he sleeps with her in the same bed, then the natural thing is you roll over, the hand goes in the wrong place, and then they get agitated, and then, you know, you find out that, you know, she's pregnant when she wasn't really planned. We're just trying to have a good night's rest. Okay. For the wisdom, the energy, the strength, the sight, and the vitality of a man who approaches a woman covered with menstrual secretions utterly perish. Like that. A man who is, here is a man who's committed. Let's see. Where's this from? Oh, this is just giving that quoting that verse. Because in here, then it says that if he's had intercourse with in water or with a menstruating woman, he should perform a penance or unnatural crime. Unnatural crime means he discharges semen anywhere other than in the yoni, like that. So, in other words, that's what I was saying before. The Vedas deal with everything; they don't leave anything left out. So there, that would be also the thing, because sometimes it's said is you know, illicit sex then simply means, you know, dealing with someone else's wife or outside of marriage. But Mano defines it more than that. Illicit sex means what's not done for the procreation of a child. You know, so having sex in any way that won't create a child then is forbidden. It's considered illicit, even though it's one's own wife. You know, one always has to remember, this shastra is for the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Like that. And, You know, so that's the principle. So those who are interested in, as quickly as possible, getting themselves back to Godhead, they follow these things. People who don't care so much, they can do whatever they like that. But they just have to know it will slow them down. That's all. That's all that's being made. You can do whatever you like, but there's reactions for them, and so that will contaminate the consciousness. It will slow you down. Like that.
If he avoids her while she is in that condition, his wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality will increase. Let him not eat in the company of his wife, nor look at her while she eats, sneezes, yawns, or sits at her ease. A Brahmin who desires energy must not look at a woman who applies colliridium to her eyes, has anointed or uncovered herself, or brings forth a child. Because all these then will burn his energy, it'll destroy his vitality. Like that. Because when women eat, sneezes, yawns, sits at her ease, then the women become sensual. And so men generally, unless they can't tell the difference between sensuality and sexuality. So just automatically one goes into the other. So that's why it's not recommended. Means husband and wife can be there together, she serves him the meal, this and that, so the interaction is there, but when she eats on her own or eats with the other women of the house or with her friends or like that. Because women like that, for them it's normal, how they eat and they stick their fingers in the mouth and they go on the whole trip on how it tastes and all this, then it's for them it's normal. But for the men, it gets weird, because as soon as sensuality comes into it, sensuality to them means sexuality. So then it becomes the problem for them. So that's why in the Vedas it separates in these ways. It's not trying to reduce the interaction, it's just trying to create that the interaction will be of a good standard, that there's proper respect.
Right. What happens
Then you, well, I mean, it's his problem, not yours. You know, that's the point, is ultimately whatever the husband demands that the wife does, if she follows it, she won't get the reaction. She may be bad for her consciousness, but the sin of it she won't get. That goes to the husband.
Well, my children have to give him, mm-hmm. serve him on their head.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, just be careful not to, you know, don't leave your fingers too long in the mouth and all those kind of things like that, you know.
Actually, I was told not supposed to do that. You know, even for this, put on chest opening once for doing that. Vishaka wanted it. She told me that, about chest size, her, that you actually shouldn't put any further than just to put the energy in that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's actually, it's energy.
Yeah, when you're eating, you may lick off the fingers at the end when you finish. Oh, don't put it inside, yeah. Yeah, it means you have to be careful. Because then, kids do it, it just looks grimy. Women do it, it looks sensual. So that's the principle. And you see, it's a very common thing, women will always do that. So unless they're aware of it, then these things happen. Okay. So yeah, that's a very good point. Like that. When she applies cudgel to her eyes, notice we got beyond the collyridium with the cudgel there, is that because there means the all the energies that the woman uses generally come out through her eyes. She can focus them in other parts of the body, but where they have the greatest strength is through the eyes. So when she's putting the cudgel, she'd be focusing so much, and so much energy will be happening. But the men shouldn't see that.
Just so we focus and we're not poking out.
No. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm just saying it's because of that, the energies are moving. So the men shouldn't watch at that time. That's all. I'm point is that it's... What we're saying is it's perfectly normal for women, but the point is that you put men in that environment, it's not normal for them. So these times are times when it's just said men shouldn't be around to see or do. or when they anoint themselves, when they're putting on oil and stuff and creams, because then they'll focus right on their skin. And the way they point it, you know, men will just put it on, but the women will put it on very nicely and everything. So then that'll catch the attention of the men. Or uncovered herself, you know, that she's dressing, she's putting on her choli, he won't watch when she's doing that, you know. And it's, you know, especially like in India, a lot of times they have the small mirrors or they do it in their own place, but if they have like a bedroom or something common, and you have the, you know, the, what do you call it?
Dressing
with the big mirror, right? So she's sitting there in her, you know, at best a choli, but in something less than that. And then she's leaning over, and then she's putting on her cudgel, and he happens to look in the mirror at that. You know, it's kind of like you just... Yeah, that's another thing. But whatever, we're here, we're talking about, because at 52 he should have gone to the forest, according to this text. That's coming up later. Yeah, yeah. So my point is one has to remember these things. So it's just a matter of, they should know it and avoid it, but if they don't, then the women know, you know, like that. Yeah, okay. Okay. So continence. Then. Twice for a man who's a snatika shall remain chaste on the new moon day, on the 8th lunar day of each half month, on the full moon day, and on the 14th, even if they fall in the period proper for a conjugal intercourse.
Oh, can I go back to point?
Yes, why not?
This is a real controversial one. This is a real Western thing. When I have my two babies, the only person I want in the room is my husband. And I see with my daughter the same thing.
You can do it, it just reduces his life, that's all. I'm just saying, it just does. Yeah, but I'm just saying is that's why in the babies it doesn't do that.
So who do you have? The mother?
Traditionally they go to the mother's house. Because the mother knows she's experienced, right? She's had the kid, so it means she's had the daughter, so she's at least had that much experience, you know? So traditionally it's like that, or known friends, or like that. Because the husband is, that's one thing. The other thing that it does is that it's so freaky, and that the women at that time, because of the situation, are going to naturally drop any kinds of formality, respect, anything. And so seeing the woman in its raw state can really put some serious doubts in the man's mind of the validity of a man-woman relationship. So that's the other thing, is that it can also, means of a man who's not so attached, it can completely wipe out the whole concept of that women actually are something wonderful.
The flip side of it is that you might get pregnant too quickly again, right?
Yeah, you can do those things. But I'm just saying, if you want to deal on the Western things where you're dealing already down with animal life, then for animals sometimes it flips, just like Narad Muni mentions, that for the Brahminical culture, then they follow these rules of trying to control the senses. But the Mlechas, because they're so out of hand, and by that, then they lose their taste for sense gratification. The Mlechas, because they're so crazy, they absorb themselves so much in it. It's like pouring too much ghee on the fire. They actually put out the fire. So by that stage, they come to the platform of not wanting to be engaged in sense gratification. But so it has an immediate effect of that. But the long-term effect is the one who's controlled his senses, they have no samskaras for their mind to fall back on. You know, when push comes to shove, that they're trying to get themselves out of the material world, while the Mlecha has a whole encyclopedia of things to stop them from actually getting out of the material world. So it may put them on the path. The Mlechas get put on the path by overdoing sense gratification. But then their journey on the path becomes very difficult due to those things. As you see, so many devotees take it up, and they're going, and then they fall away. Like that. Because of all those remembrances like that. So it's like, it's difficult. Like to discuss these things many times, it depends. Women, it's not a big deal. But the men, many times it's hard to discuss these things. So it brings back too many samskaras that they can't they can't deal with it like that. For women, because this can be thrown into the realm of sensuality, emotional, like this, they can function with it. It doesn't matter, you know. But for many men, it's very hard to even discuss these things. Because sensuality and intellectualness is two different things. So to be able to deal with sensuality in the intellectual platform means you have to detach yourself from it. If you're attached to it, it goes into there. But women, their field is attachment, so they can deal with anything intellectual, emotional, sensual, and it'll all be the same field. You can move it around.
Is that confirmed in Bhagavatam? I read that somewhere that we actually have some kind of neurons or something like that, that we cross over between emotional and intellectual backwards and forwards, and men can't, they're either intellectual or they're emotional. Yeah. Is that confirmed in Bhagavatam?
What you see is, what effect would that give? You look at that. Means, the effect would mean is that the man can focus, like take Vedanta Sutra and be very happy with it, while the, or just giving up the material world. They can just go look at it and just go, this is useless, and walk out. And they won't think, what will the wife think, what will the child think, what will my relatives think, what will my friends think. They won't do that. So that's why they can do that. It's a reality. Yeah. That's your, that's just the mechanics of why it's like that. So modern science can find the mechanics, but they can't actually come to the conclusion. But it's because of that, because both sides of the brain function at once. So as far as intelligence goes, a woman can see everything the man can see. But why it's considered a man's intelligence is superior is because superiority in the Vedic culture is judged by how far it is towards getting out of the material world. So therefore, sannyas will be considered better than vanaprastha, better than grihastha, better than brahmachari. Because brahmachari, you're just starting. Grihastha is next. Because it's the closest to getting out. Like that. So therefore, because the man's intelligence is such, is that he can just decide one day, I'm out of here. And no sentiment to anything that's here in the world, and he can just move. Well, the woman will tend to consider, well, I can see it's useless, I want to get out of here, but, you know, what will this one say, that one, and we should do this and that for them, and so many, and then they'll get entangled. So that combination of that kind of man with a woman who sees that, desires that, but because of sentiment can't do, then that combination of both their intelligence then can overcome that sentimentality. Therefore, in that point, that's where the wife is then junior, because it's for taking out. But when it's something where the man is very disturbed or, you know, sick or something where either, you know, the emotionally or physically is not well, then he becomes like the, it's like parental ras, where the wife is the one taking care and he's the junior. Like that. Because in the conjugal ras, you have all the rasas. Like that. You have the conjugal, you have the parental, where when she's having trouble, he takes care of her. When he's having trouble, she takes care of him. That's the parental ras. They're friends, so they discuss everything, plan everything together. At the same time, each of them is rendering service, so that's the servitor ras. And there must be the principle that they have appreciation and respect for each other. That's the santa ras. If that's there, then it works. No, it doesn't here, because we only found it from the other, because in discussion of the Shastra. The Parvanas, it means you have to look in Jyotish for this. So that's why this is only part of the description. You know what I'm saying? This is the Dharma aspect of the description. But actually, what are favorable, unfavorable days? Then who are the lords of those days? All these different things, then those can be seen from your astrology and stuff. You know, so you'd have to look into that to find exactly why those are. Because they have numbers. Your 11th means it's 2. 13th means it's 4. 14th means it's 5. You know, if you take numerology like this, so then there would be something there. And then your Parvan is full moon day, new moon day, Those are Shiva's days, and the Ashtamis, I'm not exactly sure whose they are. Wasn't that discussed once, the Ashtamis? Somebody mentioned once what the Ashtamis were. There's some deity there connected with that also, but I don't remember who. So they all have some significance there, just in how the universe is structured. Does that make any sense? But I can't tell you the detail. Yes.
If the husband's intelligence is
less than the woman's, that means he married someone of not equal nature.
No. If he deviates, if he goes away, then what is the duty of the wife in that situation?
If she can correct him, nice. And if not, then she just goes on performing her duties and basically, moving forward in life. Like that comes up. That's just now coming.
But usually, she can take a shelter of go to the father or something.
Yeah, means
there is no situation like this. Then no sons, father is gone.
Then you have to find friends, others who you can find that shelter in. Take more shelter than in Krishna, in the instructions of the spiritual master. Because the principle is just as the soul is always dependent upon the Lord and the Lord's associates, so the same way then the feminine nature is always dependent upon the masculine. So then one always takes shelter of that, either through other friends, other senior women, other families. The instruction of the spiritual master, understand that Krishna is there taking care, and then pull back kind of socially. You have your friends in circles, but you don't move out too much or see too much out. In other words, you don't move too freely in the social structure where you don't know the people. If it's family, friends, people you know, people you trust, move in those circles. But don't just go out and be a socialite. That's not, it wouldn't be good. In other words, then that more kind of like contemplative, that kind of thing becomes prominent. So it's like men become renounced, women become recluse. Because certain facilities in that are basic facilities are comfortable for them. It's hard to function with no regular facility. Men can do that. Women, it's very difficult. If they're liberated means actual, their Brahma-Bhuta platform, then they can function like that. But if they're still conditioned, then recluse means they get some simple facility that they, steady, and then they just stick with that, and then focus their attention on hearing, chanting, associating with those they find spiritual, inspiration with. Doing those things that are spiritually uplifting. Your deity worship, your studying like this, or, like here, we just had a group of devotees here doing parikram, go with them. These kind of things. Take advantage of more of the spiritual. Then it will be enlivening, and then stick to a group of persons who you trust and know, and that you can gain the depth of relationship that is required, the depth of emotion that's required, without having to spread it out too much. Does that make some sense? And that will give the interaction that one is looking for. And then those who you know and trust that have some experience, then decisions that you need to make in your life, then discuss it with them. If you don't know, then discuss it with others who are more experienced. That makes some sense? In other words, you have to know what it is that you're trying to get, and then find how to get that. Okay? It means in a marriage, certain things are looked for. So if they can't be gotten in its natural way, then those same principles have to be obtained, but without compromising yourself. So then you have to look at what it is. There's that emotional support, there's the facilities, this and that, so find that, but in another way. And emotional support get from other, devotees that you have trust in. Does that make some sense? No one said it would be easy, but one will be satisfied.
how I feel in the future. Even if anything falls from my reach Krishna consciousness, then the Lord should have known the choice and place. And I often speak to Master around it when he says that the life is the safety net from his consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as low as he falls, he should be okay.
So that's the thing. If the wife is chaste, then the husband, no matter what he's doing, he'll still actually be protected. And, that's the principle. So, and I say, if the wife is chaste, then that protects the men of the family. That's why it says, if you insult a chaste woman, it'll destroy your family, because her chastity is protecting her family. So if you insult that chastity, that'll destroy yours. So it's considered that women should always be chaste, even if the husband's not of good character. It's just the nature. Yeah. Yes. No, it doesn't have to. It depends how you want to see. As devotees, then there's a slightly different principle. If you're just dealing on dharma, then that's there. The reaction will go to the husband. But as devotees, then the individual has made a commitment to go back to Godhead. So this is not actually part of it. You know, when you're dealing in the realm of piety and impiety, and of the material energy, then these kind of things is that the wife won't suffer by that. The man will. Like that. So then that submission in that situation then is not then unfavorable for her chastity. Right? But as a devotee, then there's another consideration that you're trying to go back to Godhead. And then these things will just create a distraction. So then wife doesn't need to go along with that. You have to judge the whole thing, because someone who is, you know, inclined seriously towards illicit activities, by accommodating it, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to become spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So then at least in that way you can keep yourself from becoming unspiritual. But at the same time, as that's balanced by what Mataji was saying, is that chastity still is there. Yeah, because then that works. What can you do? So then the point is the most important thing is Krishna consciousness. We're using the Varnashram system, you know, and marriage and all these rites for engaging our material desires in the Lord's service. So if the alternative is just engaging the senses, but it's not connected to Krishna, what's the use of it? It has no meaning. So then one has to do what will keep one in Krishna consciousness, even though it may not be an ideal situation. But that's what I'm saying is then the emotional need and stability that the woman requires from the marriage, then she has to find that, but not through the conjugal relationship, but by through other relationships. Because anyone can be translated into the other. You know what I'm saying? It means each one is, its purpose is emotional interaction. Right? Just like the residents of the spiritual realm, their purpose is to express their love for Krishna. So then they have a particular way that they want to express that. So then you have the five rasas. But its purpose is expression of love. Right? So you can pull it back to that. So that's the point, is that interaction, emotional interaction, is necessary in relationships. But you can pull it out of conjugal and put it into another relationship, that the emotions are there. It won't take the form of conjugal, but the emotions are at least being dealt with. Maybe that particular detail is not, but the principle is. So that's what I'm saying, is one has to then find those friends that are close and you can trust, then you can get that exchange like that, you know. So that's the important element. So that's what I was saying, is the women have to know what is the nature of women so that they can deal with it to advantage in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise they'll be bewildered by it and it'll take them out of Krishna consciousness. Just like the men have to know what men are and what they're dealing with. You know, each has to know each other. They have to know the science, because it's something else. You're dealing with dead matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. That creates the body that we know. Mind, intelligence, false ego, that creates the subtle body that we know. They're all dead matter. You know, though you can have a conversation between the intelligence and the mind, it's still dead matter talking to dead matter. But, you know, we get involved and then it becomes important for us. So, because we take it seriously, therefore it has meaning. But if one actually understands it on the Brahman platform, one understands it has no meaning. So then they just leave it. Like, you know, you get two little kids talking together and they're doing a whole thing. It's either they're playing or they're fighting or that. For adults, it's just like, what has this got to do with reality? You know, it doesn't have any meaning. It means something to them for their pleasure. But in reality of what's going on, it doesn't. So that's the point. As long as one's in that, then one has to get some taste through that. Because he puts his desire on the Lord. He moves his desire and his desire, his identity of relationship, the desire within that relationship, and the goal of happiness from that relationship to the Lord. Like that, the Lord, the Lord's devotees. Then you're out of here. What happens is, if the mind focuses on any identity of the material world, any desire of the material world, or any happiness you want to gain from one of those relationships of the material world, then at the time of death it will take you to that. You know, like Prabhupada mentions that the caterpillar, because it's been caught by the wasp, then at the time of death it thinks of the wasp, so it becomes a wasp in its next life. You know, because that's important for it. It's the one that's given it so much pain, so it'll be thinking of it. So if one thinks of Krishna, then all these just fall away, because they're illusory. Means the bodies exist, that the soul's in the body and all these, but the importance that we place on it, that's what's illusory. The real importance of the gross and subtle body is simply that it's what we have in a conditioned state to use in Krishna's service. Then how to use it, then you have to know the science of it. What is mind? So how can mind be engaged? What is intelligence? How that can be engaged? What is ego? How that can be engaged? What's the body? How it can be engaged? You know, you don't go, okay, we're going to fly, you know, we're going to go on the roof of the Conch building and fly to Calcutta today. You know, it might not work for you. So if you know the actual, how you say, limit, you know, what your body can do, then, you know, it works. Like that, you know, you have to, you know, find some other method that's more grounded. You know, like that. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Well, we only went into this because that was just so there. But if we go through the whole thing, then it specifically deals with that. Like that. But you can tell the one by it's the inverse of the other. You know. Means by does that make some sense?
Yes.
If you know it. Yeah. So that's the point. Wherever the one thing is said, this is feminine, then you know the opposite is masculine. Or where it says this is masculine, the opposite is feminine. Though they may constantly switch. Because if it was so clean of a line, then people would have figured it out in their first birth in the material world and gotten bored of it. But because it's so complex, then, one point one, it's this way. 1.2, it switches.
So you can turn the manual.
Yeah, that's the... And it, well, even if you have the manual, you have to desire to follow it. That's the fun. Like that. So it can never really be figured out. You can figure out how much it needs for the interaction. Because otherwise, the nature of the species is totally different. But there's a point at which there is interaction, where men see women as part of their life and women see men as part of their life. So if that point itself is understood, then you can make it socially work, function. And if you understand the nature of the soul and the material energy, then one in one's particular life then can dissolve the whole world. You know, means the man can dissolve his whole world, the woman can dissolve her whole world, and go back to Godhead. But the point of overlap, there's a small point where the two circles meet. So that's what this is all describing.
Is that actually only applied to human birth? Like, in, say, dogs? Is a male dog and a female dog like two different species?
You can see all the same moods and everything. Yeah. You can see how they do everything. If you watch them, they do all the same things. Just it's not as necessarily as refined. Sometimes it's more refined. So, but it's
that's not
exclusive to human. No, but the thing is human birth, you can engage it from the platform of knowledge, so you actually dissolve it. The other ones just do it by the modes.
Okay.
Yeah, like that. But otherwise, it's the same thing. You see the same.
And I just had a misconception about that. I thought it was actually human birth.
No, they're all. You see, you can watch. They all deal differently. Like that. Prabhupada once was at, I forget where they were. He was with the devotees on a morning walk, and he saw the female pigeons was there eating like that. And the male pigeon comes down and puffs himself up and, makes himself look very important and all that. And the female pigeon just kind of ignores him, and he gets too close, she flies off, and Prabhupada started laughing. And he said, in all species of life, then the females play hard to get. Like that. So he was laughing about that. So it's because everything's expanded from the male and female principle. In Brahma Samhita, in the first verses, we generally start from the 29th verse. But if we chant from the first, I think it's around the 10th, 12th verses, like that, then it explains how that the species are created. The male and female concept is created because of the union between Shiva and Parvati. And from that, then everything else is created. So the maleness and the femaleness, they have their particular uniqueness that's there in every species, like that. Though what's manifest of it will be less. It's only that which matches that, or this is it. The certain principles you'll see are always the same.
Okay. Then on 4:133, verse. Let him not show particular attention to an enemy, to the friend of an enemy, to a wicked man, to a thief, or the wife of another man. For in this world, there is nothing so detrimental to long life as criminal conversation with another man's wife.
And that, because it's, you have the element that the modes of nature will just reduce the life. There's also the other thing, you're talking to the guy's wife, you may get a bamboo over your head or something. It may also be slightly detrimental to life. So some may be more direct, some more indirect, but at some point it will.
So, yeah. So it's a common principle. So that's the... Yeah. So it's lust is the greatest enemy. So then here, enemy, friend of an enemy, wicked man, a thief. Thief is trying to take something that they shouldn't take. By talking with them, then you'll gain that mood.
So same as talking with the wife of another man, then one should be very careful. If there's purpose, if there's business, if there's something, that's another thing. But it shouldn't be beyond that. That will come up. That'll come up later. And that comes up, yeah. Some topic, I think, what is it, 17, 18 or something. Okay. So that takes us down to this topic 12. That'd be quite a bit. Lust is the enemy. So, because see, all these, when they put all these together, they're actually working on the same principle. So, the enemy, the friend of an enemy, a wicked person, a thief, and criminal in conversation with another man's wife, they're all working on the same principle of something that that is not yours. It shouldn't be there. You know. So that's the. You'll see that these. How you say? Many times the verses, they'll have things that don't seem to have anything to do with each other. Like there'll be one. It's not in this half. It'll be in the other half. Is that it deals with. No, it's another one. It's talking about fire. I can't remember what it's talking about, but most of all the points that's being made is about fire, and then one of them is about women. Because Prabhupada mentions fire and butter. So there's the element of fire, the fire of creation, the fire of fertility is there in the women. That's what's gained from Agni. Like that, at the marriage rite, then the girl... The man mentions, that's what it says in there, that he's, I think it says, we've already read that, unless it comes up, no, it's later. It's later. It mentions the point that the husband has received the wife from the gods, therefore then he cannot neglect her. So it means the moon, Gandharva, and Agni, the husband receives the wife from them. That's why it goes up to the fire, and then there's a mantra, and then he receives from them. So the moon is then the aspect of nourishment, like that. You know, the mind, fine things, nourishment, that kind of interactions, like that. That is the feminine quality. And it's also, it's fire, but it's reflected fire. You know, so that's the things like, sun is prominent, moon is subservient. So the sun dynasty is the prominent dynasty. The moon dynasty, the kings of the moon dynasty always serve the kings of the sun dynasty. Like that. It always works that way. That's why the Pandavas, I mean the Yadavas, though they are actually the most powerful kingdom on earth, because their moon dynasty, they serve in Hastinapur. Like that. So therefore then the feminine nature is subservient to the man's. So all that's coming from the moon. But that thing of nourishment and those kind of emotional interactions, that's gained from the moon. Because the moon is the mind. So their principle, the main seat is the mind. You know, of mind. Well, the man's main seat is I. There's the ego. Like that. Means you'll see in the first Bhagavatam chapter 1. You know, first canto, first chapter, I think it's in there. The last verses get into this principle of I and mine. And it defines, and there's so many ways that one of the aspects it shows is that I is the masculine principle, mine is the feminine principle. You know, like that. It's kind of like the man is thinking, yes, I'm so fortunate, that he has this wife. And the wife is just, this is my husband. Would be here the intelligence, the ego. Means both have it because both are in the material world, both think they're men, that they're the controllers and enjoyers. So that's the masculine, that's the Purusha Bhav. That's what has to be removed before you can actually get back to Godhead. So you have the souls are female, so you have two females who come into the material world, both think they're male, but by karma one happens to, when the music stopped, then one of them sat in the female chair, one sat in the male chair. Like that. And so, because... Huh? Yeah, So therefore you have to have all these rules, because otherwise you don't know what's going on, because you have all these reverses.
Okay, so it means more. What's Gandharva?
Gandharva then means the fine, it means fine qualities, you know, fine speech, fine movements, fine, you know, aesthetics, all those different things. Gandharva, the Gandharvas, that's their thing, is all this fine culture and all these kind of things. Yeah. So the emotional state, then the refineness, you know, that is there, and then from Agni comes the fire of fertility. So that's why women are fire. So they have to know what the energies are and know how to control them. Otherwise, they let the fire rage and then, you know, everything melts. You know, if they know how to control those, then you know, they only get one guy to melt. You know, so that's the principles. They have to know how to deal. So if they understand the energies, they can control them. If they don't, like I know I was in so many times in Europe and this and that, and the girls, because they're not necessarily always trained, they don't know the difference between putting on the energy and turning it off. I have no idea. I was actually very surprised. Just, I had always, you know, talked, and they, girls understand when they're turning it on and when it's not. But a lot of the girls, they don't know. You know, it's just they grow up and they're always outgoing, and then, you know, the social thing, the way they interact and all that. So it doesn't matter who they're talking to, then they put out the same energies.
Like that. Indian girls, they'll come in the door and they're acting one way, and then they'll go out the door and there'll be a man outside and they're acting a completely
different. Yeah, they can just move everything.
Yeah,
they can completely move the energies.
Inside, outside, we think it's for you.
Yeah, yeah. But their point is that there's so many manifold aspects of you, so it's just a matter of who gets to see what aspect. Because you can't manifest it all the time. It means like with a child, you manifest one mood, with a husband another mood, with a brother another mood, with a friend another mood, with a, you know, someone who's in a distressed condition another mood, someone in a senior position another. So that's the whole idea in the Vedic, is that there's all these various aspects of human psyche, how to address all of them so that they're all satisfied. Because the Western is just, you know, she can walk down the ramp, and that's about it. She really can't do anything else, you know, like that. And you meet girls like that. They don't know how to do anything else other than that. So then it's a problem for them, because they're very frustrated. Yeah. Yeah, like that. So then they miss out on that, and they actually have a difficulty. So as they learn the subtleties, it's not a matter of restriction, it's a matter of what's used when, you know. It's just like you have in cooking, you know, you put certain spices with certain vegetables or certain preparations that enhances the preparation, or the amount you put, you know, it's kind of like, well, I want to put as much salt as I would like. Why should I be restricted? The recipe says 1 teaspoon. Why can't I just express myself and put in, you know, a whole box? It says you can, but it'll taste terrible. You know, so the point is you can do whatever you like, but you have to know there's a reaction. So if you put the right amount, then you'll actually get something from it. So from this relationship, you're going to get this. From that relationship, you're going to get that. And so then the thing is just understanding, as I add all that up, that's all my desires. But I don't get them all in one place or one way or this or that. I get them through all these, and that creates variety. Therefore, then life also is not as, you know, it doesn't become boring.
It's like Eastern culture, is a perverted reflection of a perverted reflection.
Yeah, that's the thing. Means the natural form, the material world's perverted reflection, means the form of culture is in place. So just like mothers act in the spiritual world towards Krishna, mothers act here towards their children. You know, husbands towards wives, friends towards friends, it all acts like that. The difference is there, Krishna's God, and everyone else's servant, and here everybody thinks they're God. So that's the perversion, is the mentality, their actual goal is perverted. Then when you take that, and then you pervert the form is actually becomes perverted, then it gets a little wild. It becomes a little hard to see what was the original plot.
That's what Prabhupada called us.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, well, you're here with the lecture, and you got to take care of yourself. Okay, so then from today's, yeah, from Thursday, we'll start with topic 12. Like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.